You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's no Niall, but it is me, Brian. And on this episode, we are covering anime that aired. Oh, this is going to be complicated because we're recording it far later than we normally do. Okay, let me do the maths. The 10th of February to the 16th of February 2020.
Yeah. And that's going to make it also very fun to try and remember what the hell we watched.
Indeed. A bunch of stuff I watched today, but there's a few things I'd watched at the start of the week, pretty much when they aired. And I can remember the vague outline of them, but details may be a little trickier.
I watched them relatively recently, but I was falling asleep the entire time, so let's see what I fucking took in.
So we shall start off with Pets, Episode 6, Backdoor, in which we have, indeed, Tsukasa had set a trap. He was luring Hayashi into his peak, because the peak is where he's the most powerful, and once you're in my peak, I can get into your peak as you're trying to get into mine. Because my lock's
so
tight.
The reason he can get in is because
it's the same peak.
Image. Yeah, it's not only it's literally the same peak, but I imagine visually and sensory wise it's very similar. But he left like a puddle of himself in the last one, and he uses that to kind of like move quicker to places he's already been. Which is an interesting variation on it, yeah. Because he keeps talking about how everyone's so much quicker than him, but he's good at getting in the back door, basically.
This feels like the bit where any sympathy you got for Tsukasa is rapidly disappearing in this episode.
Yeah, like, I can get he was fucked over a lot, but a lot of the people who fucked him over, like, what do they call the person who makes the pet?
I don't know.
His master, for lack of a better term. The person who taught him his business.
It's difficult to use master, really, because other characters actually use the word master for a specific reason later on in the episode.
that's the thing I'm trying to avoid it as well. But the guy who trained him in didn't purposely fuck him over.
Yeah.
And seemingly does have some concern over him. It's like, I don't want to fucking crush you. I just want to change your memory so you're not going to try and fucking crush me.
And the rest of the organization the rest of the organization aren't, they're not playing out that he's going to come back. We see the CEO for the first time, and he explicitly tells Tsukasa, stop expecting Hayashi to come back.
Yeah, he's not coming back, dude. He fucking betrayed us. What the deuce? Okay, that's going to be the last time I let you go, like, hey, am I going to see Mr. Hayashi? It's like, no, he's fucking done. Next time you see him, he'll be fucking dead. Or more likely crushed.
Yeah. Which, this is one of his valleys. This is him realizing that Hayashi is not coming back. Yeah. And comparing him to a pointer. And yes, you enter his peak through a dead dog's eye.
Yeah. It's the one thing in the valley, like, where he's imagining the boss is kind of going on about it. It's like, hey, it's like that pointer dog I'm using for hunting. He'll only stare at that until I make a command, and he's just like, it's kind of a pitiful thing. That's what you want to make a pet. Like, not an animal pet, but a human pet. You know what I mean?
And he's basically telling you that, him telling Tsukasa that the way you're behaving is like that pointer dog. You're behaving like the pointer dog is for me hunting.
Yeah, because they're
like
asking him, it's like, hey, how's that pet you're training in? And they don't want, like, your man wants him up high up in the organization. He seems to like him, or at least like his abilities. But it's not like, dude, you can't act like a pet now. You have to act like a master. Like, you can't be the pet. I need you to train in your pet better, but I can't have you acting like one.
We see some of that later when Katsuragi finds him. It's like Katsuragi's despair at the pair of them, Hayashi and Tsukasa.
It's like, oh, it's not only like, you fucking idiots, but it's also, what the fuck do I do?
And then you get the feeling, though, that he does have some compassion for the pair of them.
It's weird the way he's flipped from being a prick to being sympathetic, isn't it?
It is, but I think it all still fits in with how he's been presented.
Like, he's not changed at all. Our perspective on him has changed, basically.
Yes, yeah. I think because we know his tortured past now. And you can see,
and we know he'll still fucking crush a guy for no goddamn reason.
Yes.
He is a prick, but it's kind of like, he's in way over his head and cleaning up other people's messes constantly.
Yes, and he wants to make friends, but because he was happy to make friends with the bar owner. With the situation.
It's like, oh, I actually have friends. Yeah. That's unusual for me.
And he wants to be friends with these guys, but they've got their images. And that's obviously the thing which he hasn't got. And that's a barrier between him truly being friends with Tsukasa and Hayashi. He probably wants this relationship.
He can't be equals with them because they're, in terms of like their career, in terms of their jobs, they will always be like an echelon above him. And you can't really be friends with someone who's technically like your boss or your superior at work. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, Tsukasa pollutes, Hayashi's peak with his, valet.
With his valet, yeah. So, like, fills up the lovely grass with blood and guts and gore.
But in turn, that pollutes his own peak.
Because he's linked them. That's specifically how he's done it. But he's just kind of, I guess you said, doing it out of revenge. So he's happy. He doesn't care what happens to him as long as he gets the guy who fucked him over.
Whereas Hayashi does. He's trying to convince him not to do it, and he still won't listen, and they end up...
Yeah, like, at the end, like, you can see it's concerning, because he's not going like, no, don't do this to me. He's like, hey, dude, you're going to fuck yourself over. What the fuck?
Then Kazuragi finds the pair of them, and he's like, oh, God. And he's got a load of lookouts with him, and we get like, a little conversation with one of the lookouts, who's like...
Where they're kind of talking, have you heard about these guys called Crushers? And the guy driving the car away is like, don't fucking bring it up. Because that's how...
Yes.
Don't speak of the devil kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the idea that everybody knows, but no one's allowed to say.
Like, if you are in the know about it, you could get, like, called on by them. So just pretend you don't know of the crazy fucking assassins. You won't get crazy assassinated. It's fine.
Yeah. Tsukasa had given Katsuragi a message to take, if this happened, to take him to Hiroki. This is where we get... The programming and something got like, cause he's lost his phone somehow, and I'd have to go back to figure out where that happened.
I'm either thinking, right, we have to go back and figure out where that happened, or that we'll get a flashback to where that'll make sense or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's part of his programming that he purposely throws his phone away so he will search for his pocket for the USB key.
Could be, yes. Cause then he gets the USB key, and then as soon as he gets the USB key, he knows exactly who to take the USB key to. And we don't know whether he did it on the way to Hiroki's or whether he's going to do it after he's been to Hiroki's.
Yeah. We don't know the order of that, which I suppose doesn't particularly matter, maybe.
No, maybe. Mm. Maybe if it's cause, maybe if they're going to keep the identity of that person a mystery a bit longer. Then it could have happened either way. If it's not a mystery, then we may see it next episode.
Mm.
And so he's got to find somebody to come and pick Hayashi's body up. And I wonder whether, because we don't see it this episode, I wonder whether that body will have mysteriously disappeared. Somehow.
Like, is that part of, if you give this guy this USB key, he'll know what to do. He'll have my location and he'll come pick me up. And that was his, get out of jail. Card, it get out of crushed card, if similar to Tsukasa's get out of crushed card by take me to Hiroki. If this happens, me take me to him, and he's the guy who can sort me out, because it's not so much that he's trained him to do it, it's just like he'll know what to do, and he's the closest to me, so he can do it.
Then we're back to Jin, who is not Mei Ling. We learn that later on. We discover that doll is actually a human being.
Was that for sure, or was that in her head? I don't fucking know. Because at one stage the doll's like, yes, tasty breakfast. And the other time it's just drooling. And I was just like, that could be either.
I think it's a real person. I think, particularly because of like the information we get about Jin. And
okay. Yeah.
Here is that she's too old to be the person who, and that's not a lie, because Ron then tells her off for giving Satori.
Yeah, that's true.
Too much information.
Her giving, I was like, is this a clever ploy or something? It's like, no, she's just like in, like an open fucking book will tell you her entire life story.
Well, that's because she wants to use Satoru to get close enough to the CEO.
Yes.
So that Satoru can take her into the CEO's mind so that she can see memories of her mother.
Because she doesn't have any, her mother died when she was too young.
But we don't know whether that's true or not, because it turns out.
We don't know whether that's true.
We learn here that Jin and Ron are still the Qigong masters. They're the survivors of the purge.
Yeah, that's why he's given out to her. It's like, motherfucker, if you give him the timeline, he can figure out that when we were trained,
yes,
we're the only living fucking masters. Like, yeah.
Yes, because basically he's figured out that Hayashi has told him a lot of information. But they also seem, they want to make more of these babies. And they seem...
Yeah, they're apparently quite useful. I imagine they're very controllable is the...
Yes.
The ideal of it.
Yeah, because they're rubbing an aria about whether it's good that Hayashi and Tsukasa have, crushed themselves. But they're like, oh no, there's still the two pets we can use to make more babies. So presumably they're going to be targeting Satoru and Hiroki, except of course Hiroki does have someone to protect him because he goes into Tsukasa's mind and cleans out his peak. But damaging his image in the process, we see.
It's weird the way they keep introducing rules, but it's all still reasonably understandable.
Yes. And also because everything kind of works, the kind of like the mental part of it reflects the physical world part of it with all the espionage hijinks.
That's true. So there being layers in terms of like the organization and who's working for who and all that kind of stuff works in terms of the psychic mind games. And
yeah,
stuff.
And yeah, the terms they use because it's called backdoor, sure, because that's what Tsukasa refers to his puzzle as like the backdoor. Mm. So he's like hacked Hayashi's mind in this way. And that's kind of where we leave it with Tsukasa happy to be back, but he's like, concerned, and because now the way he cleans it is because Hiroki shares his peak with Tsukasa, and now they're kind of, who's the pet now, is the question the viewer is asking.
Yeah, I'm going to use the term master, I need to come up with a better one. The guy who trains the pet shares his peak to train in the pet, but yeah, he did the reverse. He was supposed to be the pet, but he shared his peak. And he's like, what the fuck did you just do? And it's like, you're not supposed to do it in that order, which is, does that make it like a two-way street rather than a one-way, a fixation? It's obviously that the master loves the pet.
Yes.
But in a different regard than the pet loves the master.
Yeah. And but also that we see the difference of, with Hiroki is that he saw the thing in Tsukasa's peak that he liked, rather than when Tsukasa has clearly just copied Hayashi's peak. Wholesale.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like he made his peak like water, because obviously his image is a fish, but it's kind of like, because initially it was just a river, but to a goldfish, that's a vast fucking ocean, so it visually and what it means to him is a very different thing.
Yeah, it's really, really good. There was some... the animation was a bit wonky in sort of staying on model, but the direction was cracking all the way through. And I think it kind of picked up in the second half. It turned, once we get to the Satoru conversation and then the cleaning out of Tsukasa's mind is where the animation picks up.
Mm.
But yeah, it's all kind of coming together. We know like what... We don't really know who the villains are, because everybody's a villain at this point except Hiroki. But we kind of got a clearer idea of like what everybody wants, except maybe the CEO, the president of the company. I guess he just wants to continue to make money through.
Yeah, I imagine it's all like all these mind games, literal mind games, are like being played just for the purpose of making money as a criminal enterprise.
Yeah, I guess we don't know
and control, obviously. There's probably an amount of political control.
Yeah, I guess we don't know what Hayashi wants with the information he's got off Katsuragi.
Yeah, yeah.
Or indeed, who the person he's delivering it to is, whether Hayashi survived. Because you obviously...
Yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, you don't see if Hirashi get out of that woods. He calls in someone else to get him out, and he's apparently been crushed, but we literally watch Tsukasa get uncrushed.
Yes.
So,
and we know that crushing somebody doesn't kill them either.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And there's ways of coming back from it, obviously, in the very same episode. So you're like, I'm not sure he's out of the fucking game yet. And at the very least, he's got that fucking USB up in the air.
Yeah.
So he's not... What he knows isn't done. Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously crushing somebody doesn't necessarily stop any of their programming they've already hypnotizing they've done to them.
Yep.
Another peep. I did like Katsuragi, he's still a jerk when he makes Hiroki think that it's all his fault that this has happened. But that's to stop him from going berserk. Because once that gets into, that actually calms Hiroki down, thinking that he's responsible.
Yeah, because one of the things he's shitting a brick with, like, driving the car back with your man comatose in the back, he's like, oh my god, if I take him to fucking Hiroki, he's going to kick my ass, he's going to go crazy. And then the only thing that calms him is the USB thing. But obviously, in the meantime, that calmness, the management go like, actually, this is your fault, so that'll make you feel bad, so you won't, like, lash out at my brain.
Yeah.
Well, there's literally nothing I could do to stop you.
Well, he's trying to, because what he's trying to do, he puts his hands up so he can't be hypnotized, because...
Yeah. He's trying to block it first, and then it's like, okay, let me explain, in a way that will... I don't know if he was doing that successfully, like, if he thought that was a good idea, or if he's just being an asshole and blaming the other guy.
Yeah, that could also just be the case. Yeah, it continues to be a good show, and... while it goes into some bleak places, it's not as oppressive as Babylon was in terms of it.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel Babylon definitely felt like it was trying to shock. Yeah, it was trying to say like
Babylon's like, ooh, the nature of good and evil and innocent people dying, and this one is like everyone's a bad guy. Like the most innocent guy, the Hiroki, has done crimes.
Yes,
it's kind of like. They're all kind of jerks, so you're kind of like, I don't mind any of these fuckers getting their own, you know?
But at the same time, it's like, what their lives were waiting... The lives which were waiting for them before they were turned into jerks were far worse than them being jerks.
Yeah, and again, it's not that I just want to see them get their asses kicked or anything, because you kind of get to understand them and how they feel and what they want and who they want to be with or have a connection with. You do get them as characters. They're not just like, let's see these guys get murdered. That would be uninteresting as well. But like you say, it's not as bleak because they're all kind of jerks in some regard or another.
Now it's time to learn about recycling with Super Shiro, episode 18. Bottles, bottles, bottles. This time, it's a glass bottle that is the bone. And wouldn't you know, it's recycling day. So Shiro and Dekapu have to go and dig through all sorts of crates of glass recycling. But then the recycling truck comes along and they have to chase the bottles to the recycling plant where we learn.
They have to stay hidden the entire time because to be a superhero is to do it covertly, baby.
Yeah, I do like, I love every time they're like, there's a degree of cooperation between them.
Every now and again, like, not every episode, but most episodes, they kind of go like, let's work together kind of thing. Like, at one stage when Shiro got his foot, caught in a bottle, like, you know, Dekapu's just laughing at him, but then he kicks it off and Dekapu gets it on his head and he's like, he can't breathe. And Shiro's like, oh, I actually have to save him right now because I can't let him suffocate. That's not very heroic.
Yeah, they're perfectly fine traveling on the recycling lorry with each other.
In a different world, they could be friends.
Yes. Well, they are dogs.
Yeah.
They do have that in common. And then, yes, it's the usual sort of conveyor belt nonsense that happens when a cartoon finds itself.
Man, conveyor belts, big old fucking smashy pylon hammer things. I was just like, oh, this is great. A big furnace at the end. Oh,
yes.
Top notch.
So he has to stop time, and then he realizes, oh, I could have just hit the emergency stop button all along.
Well, I guess stopping time give him a chance to think he could do that, maybe.
Which is, again, is useful education. Should you ever find yourself in some sort of factory, you should use the emergency stop button when you get into trouble.
They do tend to be big and labeled like such, yeah.
And then, of course, the bottle blows up because it wasn't the real bone after all.
Yeah, it was a bottle. A bottle is not a bone.
I do hope, like, the final episode is just clearly a bone.
It's like, oh, it wasn't bone-shaped, it was just a bone.
Next time, showdown at the cornfield. You gotta think the crow's gotta be in that one.
It feels like it kind of deserved to be.
Right here, next up we've got My Hero Academia, episode 81, School Festival. Here's where we get to... Brian not quite remembering because this was the very first thing he watched. So the gist of it is they're trying to figure out what they can do for the school festival because, hey, in case you'd forgotten, dear viewer, this school doesn't just teach superheroes. It teaches other people with powers.
The guys who make the gadgets and whatnot. All that stuff. Oh, and the business end of the course, which is very important, obviously.
Yes. Yeah, I do hope we eventually get a focus on that somehow in the story as like somehow they come and save the day.
By business.
Using their business skills. or we'll find out what sort of powers are useful in terms of being a superpowered businessman.
Like, I imagine it's like really lame powers that wouldn't be good as a superhero, but were excellent as a businessman. For example, like, you know, you can drive late at night and your eyes never get tired. It's like, oh, fuck, that's really good.
So they decide they need to do something which will, everyone will benefit from. So they have to eliminate various, this like service things. Can't do that. Everybody else, people on the business course can easily do the service thing much better than us.
We can't do like food things. Some great fucking food ideas, and a lot of you make great food, but we literally go to a cafeteria with one of the best fucking food superhero based guys ever. So I was like, yeah, we're not going to compete with that.
But we open with Mina Ishino sharing her breakdancing skills against some really terrible hip-hop music. I was like, could you not have got better music for her to dance to? Because the dancing is some of the best animation we've seen.
It's very good, but I'm guessing, since it's just training stuff, maybe it's just like, I just need like a friggin' an app that has a little beat on it or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm just thinking it was the cartoon. Couldn't you have...
Should have been able to afford it. Yeah. Like, with the money you're getting.
Deku and Ayama try and join in, but they're not very good. But as the episode progresses, they get better at dancing.
They've been practicing. It's nice to see.
Apparently she's really good at teaching people to dance.
And that's one of the things that lets them kind of focus in on that. It's like, oh, if we put on a show for everyone else to show that, because we're bringing a lot of heat and trouble to the school, so if we put on something for everyone else's benefit, that's kind of what we should focus on, because it's like we need to show that we're not just causing you trouble, we want to help you out. So an entertainment thing. So dancing? But what does dance need?
Yes, because they're constantly bugging Kyoka, or rather, Kaminari is constantly bugging her. Like, about all the musical instruments she's got in her room and how good she is at playing them all. And, eventually they convince her to, we'll do a music performance and a dance.
I did like the way they had the meeting and the teacher just fucking zones the fuck out. The entire thing, even though he's clearly like listening and paying attention, while sleeping somehow, he's just that good. I did like Ida being like, it's like all brilliant ideas, write it down. And then they just start like mercilessly knocking them off the list if they sound really fucking stupid or vague.
Yeah, Deku's is a hero quiz.
That's so like you. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Yeah, and
no idea is shot down when it's said, but then they're shot down very quickly after. That was pretty fun.
They finally just basically have to decide it after class because they didn't manage to do it in class. They had to decide overnight because if they haven't got anything by the next day, then they're going to have to do like a
public lecture.
Public lecture, that's it. Yeah,
which is just them sitting in class and everyone watching. That would suck.
So they're watching a music video and then it auto plays to a mysterious man's face. Deku and Tagata go and visit Eri.
It's her first request since she kind of got out of that fever.
Yes. Also, she wants to know everybody's names. Make sure they're okay. She only knew Lemillion's name.
He said his name was Lemillion and I didn't know your name. The green haired kid, you know.
Yeah. They go with a razor head and they want to make a smile, so they organize it so that she can come to the school festival.
I love Razorhead's like background acting in this episode. He generally does a good job, but the kind of thing of like he's watching it and the doctor's like, ooh, we're still scared of her, whereas Razorhead's just like, I really wish I could help this kid more than this, so when Deku kind of says to him, it's like, hey, let's take her to school festival. He's like, oh, that's a fucking great idea, kind of thing. But in his flat, monotone way of doing that. Good stuff.
There'll be candy apples there.
The Million has decided this is a date between a man and a woman. And Deku's like, dude, no, don't. don't put it like that.
Then we get our dog police officer is back.
I love that guy. Wow.
He's very upset that this super criminal has uploaded another online video and that the videos are getting better edited every time.
I mean, they're not good.
No.
But they are fun to watch, will admit. I was less like, yeah, this is a good show. I'd watch this on YouTube.
The problem is, this week somebody fansubbed the first episode of the new Yo-Kai Watch series, and that opens with such a great tonal parody of YouTube documentary videos that this one does feel like, oh, this doesn't really feel like a YouTube, because they'd even recorded the sound in such a way so that it sounds like somebody recording something in their own living room.
Oh, like shitty mics and everything.
Yes, yeah. Like too much room sound, like too much echo, very flat. Also the guy just speaks really fast with a monotone voice. And it's got the constant jump cuts of where they've cut out their uhs and ums.
I like to think that Gentle like re-edited his own sound thing later, and you know they got the cuts together. It still looks fairly amateurish.
Yeah,
but they're saying it's like, wow, it's gotten so much better. And I was like, Jesus, what was it before?
Yeah, the best bit about this is just how all the camera shots are so low because of LeBrava's limited height.
But that's kind of like, they're all trying to do like cool upshots. it's an artistic choice, I swear.
So yes, Gentle is this very polite supervillain who is holding up a convenience store.
He's got a knife. Watch out. Your man's just like, okay, I'll do whatever you want. And two heroes show up. He's like, they think they can catch me with two heroes. And like, I think there's three more to show up. He's like, fucking smash cut.
Yes. It seems like he doesn't want to make people to see exactly how his quirk works, but we see that the convenience store has got very wobbly in the background. And he's left his what he robbed behind as an appearance fee.
He took nothing. It's entirely about the clicks for him. Yeah.
Yes. And then we see them, trying to drink a cup of tea on the top of a very high building.
I fucking love that bit where he's trying to dramatically stand there with his coattails fluttering in the wind, like, it's like, the coolest shit. It's like, dude, you can't pour tea in gale forces. They're just scalding themselves in the eyes constantly. And I was just like, that's fucking brilliant. That's a good joke.
Yeah. I hadn't realized he had gray hair from the comic. I don't know if I'd seen that. Obviously, I hadn't seen a color cover with him on.
Sure.
I just assumed he was blonde because he's only 32 years old.
I feel like if that's the case, it's probably like dyed gray.
Yes,
like,
I think you're right. Yeah.
I think he's going for the gentleman thief thing, and I think like grey hairs makes it more classy somehow.
Yeah, we'll see what he looks like in it. Well, he may actually be in some of those.
Oh, he's in the end credit one. I did see him. He's there with a fucking pot of tea, in case you didn't pick it up.
Yeah. So yeah, that's where we're left. This mysterious new goofier villain.
I think we need some light shit though, dude.
Yeah,
a lot heavy.
I think the idea is just to show that, like, I feel like they're trying to go through different types of villains.
Yeah.
Before they hit the end game? I don't know. I mean, it's coming to a head in the comic at the moment. I don't think it's the end game, but it's definitely coming to the head of something.
I mean, like, this kind of archetypical villain is always quite light, I think. What was your man's name in Marvel? Like, the Black Fox or something like that.
He's in Black Cat at the moment. He's one of the main characters.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone keeps coming back to him. He's like, he's a guy in a cat suit. He's an old dude with a fucking, like, you know, a Van Dyke kind of mustache and thing. And it's just like, yeah, we like this kind of thing. It's fun.
Yeah, I guess it's because this kind of thing is where superheroes came from in the first place.
And that kind of character is never like, I'll fucking kill you kind of thing. It's more so, those guys are all right. They're harmless enough. Like, they're good crack. Whenever they appear.
Yeah, and obviously the Phantom Thief thing has a...
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
Has a big appeal in Japan. Though this guy is not really being much of a Phantom Thief. He's the opposite. He wants you to know he did it. That's true. Like, the Phantom Thieves leave a calling card, but they don't want you to know what they look like.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, they don't have a YouTube channel, so yeah, a little different.
Yeah, you're right. He's kind of like, but he's like a goofier version. He's like somebody attempting to be Raffles.
sure, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's not quite up to the job.
Mm.
But annoying the police anyway.
I mean, like, I think it's more so, it's like, well, he didn't do much in the way of crime because, like, he literally left the money behind him, and it's just an insurance thing. They'll probably be able to claim. They'll probably end up richer out of it. but he's probably going to encourage people to also make YouTuber fucking criminal channels. You know, it's just like, we don't need more crime. We don't need more encouragement of villainy. Yeah.
I can't remember if his thing is that he was trying to encourage people to be more like this sort of villain and less like the murdering superheroes villain.
The more fun villain, the more it's like, ooh, I'll get you next time, Batman, 60s yes. Batman. It's just like, these guys, they don't really do any major harm.
Yeah, I can't remember if that's part of his thing or not. I know what his general thing, I know what the ultimate point of the character is, but, but I can't remember if that is a thing as well.
Right.
But yeah, I think you're supposed to feel a degree of sympathy for him. And you, obviously, you're gonna, cause he's not a Yakuza. Using a child to make weapons out of. He's not a misled, young man who's, heir to the throne of the world's greatest supervillain.
Like, he didn't murder anyone, and he maybe beat up five guys, but more so probably took them out with superpowers in a way that they're probably going to be fine from. So yeah, he's harmless, basically.
Yeah, and he's not murdering people to make a political statement, like Stain was.
He came out of a cashier with a knife. Did not use the knife, didn't even take anything.
Yeah.
In comparison to some of the other people, it's like, yeah, that's a fucking saint, nearly.
Yeah, I feel like he's like a reaction to Stain in some
sure,
way.
Yeah, yeah.
Which probably helps you, the reader, remember that Stain is a thing. All the viewers are like, oh yeah, Stain was a bit like this, but this is a nice version of him. But Stain never wanted it either. That's the other thing. Stain never wanted everybody to pay. He wanted the heroes to pay attention, not the populace and other villains to pay attention. So, but yeah, Stain's name did come up in the comic a couple of chapters ago. So we'll see where he's getting pulled back in again.
Okay.
Cause ultimately I feel like he might have a face turn in him somehow. Cause obviously it could be the
well,
end.
he was doing what he thought was the right
yes,
thing.
Yes, he doesn't
how
care.
How he was doing it was killing and hospitalizing people. So,
and he doesn't
you know,
care for the League of Villains either, does he? So that's the...
No. He wants good heroes, so he definitely doesn't want villains.
So that's My Hero Academia for the week. Then the other thing which I may have trouble remembering is, welcome to Demon School, a Rumicon, episode 20. Glorious Award and Treatment of Humans. So it's the prize giving after the school festival.
I did like the opening where it's like, and the person who'd be most excited to hear who won number one will be really excited by when we announce it at the end of the thing. And everyone's like, what the fuck? Come on. I thought they were going to draw it out till the end of the episode, but no, they basically go into that scene after the credits, which is great.
Yeah, I do like how they've got, everyone in the, in their class. I can't remember what they're called now.
The delinquent class or something?
Something like that. They're like the, dysfunctional. I can't remember exactly what the term is because they've not been in the class for so many episodes. But they all seem to be good friends now. It's like Sab not thinks that he should win, but he's also perfectly happy if Arubakun wins because he's his rival.
Yeah, that makes him look good because like, oh, if my rival won, that means I'm fucking second to win, which means, yeah, it's still pretty good. Like he's excited for them, but he thinks he should win. Yeah.
But as it turns out, none of them win. Jazz is part, his group does win. They're getting the, water out of the stone. New magic club.
Apparently it is very impressive. And I was like, I know, I think that'd be super lame to look at, but all the demons are like, good job. That's pretty cool stuff. Cutting edge, shit. They get it. I forgot who gets the second place one. Is it the new magic guys get the second
they
place.
They do. I can't remember who gets the third place, but it's the broadcast. Club.
Oh, it was the Succubus Club. We got third
that's
place.
That's it, yeah. It's the Broadcast Club.
Yeah, the Broadcast
Club.
Guys.
Yeah.
Because they kept announcing, they kept going at it, they kept things together, and to be honest, they actually, like, fucking held shit together pretty well, so I'm like, yeah, they did great, actually, when you think about it.
Yeah, they weirdly did better than they did better than they even were aware of, because nobody's aware of what actually happened, apart from Iruma and the teachers.
I feel like a lot of people got high points in the Succubus Club because they were like, ooh, sexy lady.
Yeah,
and, you know, they'd mark it very high, but then everyone gave a few points to the Broadcast Club. It's like, oh yeah, they did great. They give them 1 point or 2 points. And it's just like, oh yeah, that all adds up because basically everyone kind of went, yeah, they're great. They did a good job, which is nice that they get appreciated for it. But there's a mystery award. The teacher comes out and announces, this new award is the tricky award for being tricky fuckers. And one person off that group will get a, what do you call it? Level up?
Yeah, one rank up.
Rank. Thank you. I couldn't think of the name.
Yeah, so they can pick up on themselves. They just kind of like try to hand wave where the fourth member of the team's disappeared to.
Yeah. Well, not everyone's getting the award, so it doesn't matter. Only one of them. Doesn't matter where the other guy is. Everyone ignore this.
He's just taking some time off. 2 years with good behavior. So, and then Sullivan congratulates him on standing out so well, and then Rue becomes horrified. It's like, oh no, this was what I was trying to avoid.
Oh no, I got on stage and accepted an award, and everyone was really like, hey, cool fireworks, we'll remember those forever and ever and ever, and you. And he's like, ah, shit. And then him singing not the national anthem, the school anthem, and just like, wait, when did I fucking get used to singing this horribleness?
But of course, the school anthem we learned in the second half is probably a throwback, because we get Iruma meeting Amory's dad, who, it turns out, the immigration department is mainly returning humans to their own world where demons steal them.
Yeah, it's kind of like they're actually altruistic. It's like, hey, we can't have people making fucking blood packs and all this kind of thing. That's super illegal. He's only met one human, I think he said to Ruma. It's like, and he returned him safely to his world, erased his memories of the demon world so he could live a fucking life where he didn't realize he was trapped in hell at any point.
Yeah, which makes me wonder whether that was the last demon king, given his disappearance.
Fucking cover that up. Whoops.
But yes, he's basically like, I'm not saying you're a human, son, but if you are a human, I just want you to understand.
Here's how I would treat a theoretical human, because here's how I treated a literal human. Just saying to you, kid, because I did like the thing with Sullivan where he just walked out and he's like, you can't walk out, we're still haven't completed our investigation. And he's like, you don't have any fucking evidence. Bye! You know, it's like the threat, and then like, you can't fucking stop me anyway, I'm Sullivan. And he's like, so I don't have evidence. I'm pretty sure that kid's human, but I don't have evidence of it. Yes. So I can just suggest to him, dude, if you're under a blood pact by Sullivan, you know, I can get you the fuck out, right?
Yeah. He's basically trying to be his best friend, which is fine.
But he's doing it in such a weird, creepy man way. It's great.
And then his daughter shows up and then says too much.
That's so good.
And then he stops being an immigration officer and turns into a dad.
Yes, the flip is fucking, I could see it coming a mile away, but it's what this show does very well and what we really liked about it. You can see the fucking joke coming and you fucking love it when it hits.
Yes.
As an immigration officer, he's like, I gotta get in with this kid. He's gotta like me. He's gotta trust me. But he's doing it in kind of a creepy way. Come over here with me. I'm a stranger. You don't know me. Let's have a conversation. And, he's shitting it and is like, but then, he changes how, Iruma sees him differently once. It's like, oh, that's Amy's dad. It's like, oh, cool. That's fine. We're tight. But she's kind of like, hey, me and Iruma hang out. He's a good demon. It's like, why are you fucking, you hanging out with him? What are you fucking doing? You know, it's kind of like, hang on a second. What's my daughter doing with this? No, it's not even that he's a human, this young man.
Yes, that's it. Stops being considered a human. It's just a teenage boy.
I can't say that I'm reading illegal texts. Because my dad's an immigration officer and those are, that'd be a bit weird. We talk about love.
That's it, yeah.
And romance and our futures.
Yeah, and everything she says.
And the dad's just like, oh, shit.
Everything she says causes his glasses to break again, to which Aruba comments like, how are these glasses breaking so often?
And he's basically like, the life is fucking drained out of him. He's like, oh, I thought that was weird. It's like, oh, daddy, I want to be your bride. I'm guessing that's like the innocence thing. And her innocence is kind of like, she's going to marry this other man. Yes. And he's not my little girl anymore. And he's just fucking like, I don't know what to fucking do.
Yeah, it's because she says we sit around discussing our futures together. That's when he goes into the reverie of imagining getting married.
Yeah. And not being his daughter, or his little girl, I suppose, anymore. Yeah.
And the conclusion is basically Iruma realizing that, while he's got an escape route if things get turned bad, it's actually living in the demon world is much better than living on Earth for him.
He had a real shitty life on Earth, but he's got friends, he's got a family, he's got people who care about him. Including immigration, who care about him. It's just like, it's better here.
But he still says, I'm gonna go out of my way to make sure they never find out I'm human.
Just in case they eat him. You never know.
Yeah. Next week it's the, the Tsukuba is, Aiko taking photos of Irumakun, and then Alice catches her, and then he's just happy. He wants to have a look at these great photos.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, I just want to take a picture of him eating because he's so amazing at eating. He's like, I know, isn't he? I'm his biggest fan. You know, they're both just fanning.
And then Aruma's like, it's rare to see him talking to a girl. <It's>
like, oh, that's nice.
But yeah, that was like the clearest it is like of Asmodeus like clearly having a crush on Aruma himself. But
yeah, because you're literally comparing him to the person who has a crush on Aruma and one other character.
Yeah. I do hope that's the joke, that she just keeps on crushing on everybody who rescues her at some point.
I could see her falling for Azazel because they have a common interest.
Yeah. There's a character coming up, and I don't know if we'll see him this season, but there's a character who seemingly, he like fills the Mendo role, but he's like also trying to look, he also thinks he's like the romantic lead in the shoujo comic. And how he's presented, as a double gag. I don't know who he's going to be, the impact, but, next week is the thing I thought was going to end the series. It's the arc with the, what they call it, the Av doll or Devi doll or something.
Oh, the, idol, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. Devi idol?
Dem doll, that's it. Demon doll, yes.
Okay.
Avdol's a character in something, isn't it?
Jojo.
That's it, yes. I don't know what's he doing in here, yes.
I'm not gonna say fucking no to it.
No, it would be great if he showed up, but no, it's the explanation of the one character who's the credits who we haven't met yet.
Like, okay, so, like, just trying to infer this, I don't know. Is that the girl with the blue hair and ice powers?
That is correct. It is the girl with the...
Because I figured, again, she's in the background, like, they're all reading Aruma's done well in the newspaper, and Azazel's getting it laminated in a really gross living laminator thing, and she's just, like, scrunching it up in the background angrily. It's like, what? Just get on with it. Just, if you tell him you pissed at him, then just get it out of the way.
The other tease is the bit earlier in the battlers bit where they're trying to convince her to go in the virtual reality game where you can pretend to be an idol.
Mm-hmm.
Which she doesn't have
to. And she seems super not interested.
Already does. So we'll find out about that next week, which makes me wonder what they're going to finish the series on. I think it's only 23 episodes. So we've only got 3 more episodes.
Okay.
I think that's what it says on the website.
Yeah, a bit of a like slow fucking burn with that whole bit, but yeah, not still good show overall.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything. Well, there's like a semi-dramatic thing, and there's a reveal, but the next big drama thing is a long way off. And, and he's pretty good. There's another key character they've got to introduce yet, even before they've properly. They introduced him before they properly introduced everybody else in the class. But thankfully, the next big dramatic arc does kind of get to some more of those classmates. And,
they're actually involved, okay.
Yeah, cool. It fills out their backgrounds a bit, gives them a bit more to do. Obviously, we're going to get one of them filled out next week, actually today, as we're recording it. But there we go. Next up, we've got Inspector, Episode 6, Logical Fiction. Tell me all about it, Dwayne.
Right, see if I can fucking remember it. So, for the most part, the entire episode is them sitting in... I have some of the characters' names, but not all of them. Good job, me. Cammy, the police officer's apartment, and just sitting and having a conversation. Sometimes, like, do cuts and everything like that. But it's mostly entirely that... some like flashbacks and some like thinking of a theoretical situation and doing it with diagrams. But other than that, mostly them walking back after the conversation. But conversation is thus. How do you defeat a thing that is a meme, really? Like you're a fucking Slender Man or you're, how do you beat up a fucking creepypasta, basically? And I was like, that's a good one, because initially the cop's like, oh, well, I mean, like, we could get the fucking site taken down, but that might look a little suspicious for you to just cancel it. And the one's like, no, the idea is already out there. This is up on a wiki and shit. You know, people could just internet archive it and all that kind of jazz. So what you need to do is defeat the idea with, defeat this fiction that has been created, and becomes a ghost. You need to defeat it with, like, logic and reason. So she basically wants the cop to give her everything she has on the case so they can use not so much deductive reasoning, but they can use like the layouts of the case to construct as like, no, that couldn't happen. Here's what really happened. And as people like lean more so towards the truth, they'll stop believing in the fiction, which is creating this ghost, this yokai. But yeah, so and the cop was compiling a thing, like a dossier of it, like where basically like, the cops were like, okay, so she went into this building site, young 19-year-old on the run for the press, thinking that she killed her own father. It's like, was she meeting someone there? And it's like, they looked into that. It's like, no, she probably just buggered off into here because she was hiding in the town from the press to have a few cigarettes because they did find a few cigarettes there. And she did smoke, but she was 19, so it was, you know, it's not legal for her to smoke. So she probably like, I'll just hide in this building site and have a few cigarettes while being upset. And one of the things that made the police think that it was someone else initially was obviously that, you know, someone could have brained her with a pipe or something and then dropped a bunch of girders on her and it's fine. But she'd no like defensive scars or anything like that. And she also had no defensive scars from girder falling on you. Oh, no, you know, you put your arms up and then your arms get crushed. But the only thing that got crushed was her face. And they're like, it's almost like she kind of like resigned herself to it and was like so depressed. And so, Iwagana is kind of like looking at the evidence. It's like, yeah, that all kind of fits. Now let's go talk to a witness. So they go to the building site in the dead of night because there's no people around. And there is a ghost of a construction worker there. Our cop Cammy is freaking out because she's just like, I'm scared of ghosts. But they literally just talked to him. It's like, oh yeah, I saw the whole thing. Oh, it's fucking terrible tragedy. Yeah. So the way it looked to him is that she didn't even fucking try to get hit and she did get hit by the girders. And Yuan's like, yeah, that checks out with the thing. And then the cop's kind of like, wait a minute. Why did you want to find all the information and set up this whole scenario based off the evidence that the cops put together? And when you literally have a witness here and, it was basically, I want to see what the most reasonable thing is, like what deductive reasoning brought about as the, and it turns out the cops were right. They had they'd figured out pretty much what happened, that it was an accident. So that we can construct a truth that is more believable than this fun fiction, that kind of thing. Because the fiction of like the spooky ghost that's going around is really palatable. But if it's like a logical kind of truth where it's like, if you just follow through these steps, these are the things that happened. Went in to get a cigarette. Got killed, didn't try to stop it because she was depressed and she was on the run for so long. And that's fine. They're kind of like, okay, we'll go back. We'll start spreading this rumor online. We'll get it to message boards and stuff. It'll be all good. The only thing that would go very poorly right now, and we seem to be good because she's randomly appearing and then scaring people and no one's gotten majorly hurt, is really bad if she kills someone. Because if she kills someone, that would make it very definitive. This is a fucking monster that is around and has stalking prey and that kind of thing. And unfortunately, Sergeant Terada is investigating this on himself. He tries to confront the ghost, tries to punch her in the gut, doesn't work out for him, and he gets hit with a steel girder in the head, killing him. That's blowing up. It's like, have you on message boards and on things where it's like, have you heard the fucking news? It's like, oh, some detective got killed by the ghost. And it's like, oh, that's going to be a much more difficult problem to clean up. That's the episode. A lot of talking, a lot of fun stuff, a lot of theorizing. Is like, how do you defeat an idea? But really, really fun stuff, yeah.
Excellent. Right, let me see if I can crack through all the things I watched that you didn't watch. Yeah. So, Ryosolga 46, the Noble Dino Knights. The Dino Knights volunteer to seal themselves back up to prevent Eras running wild. And we discover by the end of the episode that Eras... originally created, they created the Ryo tribe first, but then to protect the Earth, but the Ryo tribe just split into two factions and started fighting each other instead. So in order to stop them doing this, Eris then created the Druidons. But after the Druidons prevented them from fighting each other, the Druidons decided they were going to try and conquer the Earth and had to be seen off by the first lot of Ryosolgas.
So the Knights were made to defend the Earth, but they both had two ideas about what their job entailed, so they've kind of had an infight. So they made monsters for them to fight together as a united force, but then the monsters also wanted to destroy because that's what they were meant to do.
Possibly. I mean, it's a thing they've pulled out, not entirely out of their ass, but it was like, I think this just about works, but maybe not with the earlier episodes with a different producer. Apparently there was a producer change midway through, which may have affected the storylining. And obviously the missing actress definitely did as well. I see some people thought she was ill, but I don't know whether that's true. That might just be guesswork, because obviously she's done other acting in the meantime, so. The Seto, last time Seto sealed Eris, he hidden away some armor, which was, kind of like the Geysorg armor, uses that to power the dad up. The problem is the dad's an old man, and though he's probably not that old, but he's playing older than he actually is.
He's a really, like, old man, like, a few feet from the grave, like, he's 30 or something.
Yeah, something like that. And so he has difficult fighting. We get a, like, nice little gag where they're all doing their, Knight of Chivalry, Knight of something, and then he doesn't have any words to say because he did it all alone last time. So. He's just like, Yeah, so they're gonna fight, Precious, and this is where basically Creon and Wizzle show up and say, tell Precious to stop fighting because it's pointless, and then we get the explanation. But Eris is having none of it and tries to blast Precious. Creon leaps in the way to save Precious, but it just goes straight through him because he's made of goo. And, this gives Creon like a brief insight into what Eris wants. But then Precious is turned into an evil monster, and they have to fight Precious next week, along with Yabbersword, and then also Eris himself. I think that might be the last episode. So it looks like they've got to fight God, because it looks like Eris is just going to wipe the slate clean and start life on Earth once again. Made a bad job of it the first time around. Let's see how Eris can do it this time around. It feels like it'd be a good ending. I'm just not sure if you went to the first episode and then the last episode, whether you'd think they're even the same series.
That much would change. Huh?
I don't know. We'll see whether the actress playing UH comes back. It looks like, the guy playing Wadda, the guy who's in the Geysorg armor, is back. So maybe I'm sure you've got to bring all the people back. That's the way to give yourself a happy ending, but I did notice they've given all the, like, the dramatic lines in the preview to the actress playing Pink. So I wonder if that's who they decided was the best actress. I'm not sure she is. I think the guys playing the green and the black did the best work.
She could be, like, the new in thing. She might be the most popular one.
Yeah, maybe. They definitely give her and Red, like, the key roles in this episode. Though for the mums, Black spends a great deal of it with only half a shirt on as it got ripped off in the fight last night.
Excellent.
Meanwhile, in Kamen Rider 01, he can only use the berserk mode of his, none of the other power-ups now work with the belt.
Oh, is he like virus fucking scan? You need to get that cleaned out or something.
They basically, by the end of the episode, they need to figure out the evil programming in the power up. It was getting, got very Babylon for a moment as they pondered the nature of good and evil. Anyway, that's the ongoing plot. The episode plot is the girlfriend from the fraud case returns and she wants to find a new husband, and so they take her to a matchmaking Humagear, who, once he finds their match, cries out, "Best match!" And I was like, that's a Kamen Rider Build reference, thank you very much. Because that's what the belt used to say when you got the best power-ups in. Mm. And it turns out that her best match is a Matsu Guy Kamen Rider Falzer. So they organise a meet-up, and it doesn't go well, and Guy leaves feeling insulted. But as he's leaving, a raid shows up and attacks. Valkyrie battles it. The matchmaking robot gets injured. 01 then powers up, despite his secretary telling him not to because he's an evil belt now. And he ends up, rather than attacking Raid, attacks Valkyrie instead. They rebuild Match after, and this is where we get like the pond. He comes out and says something about good and evil, and that causes, Izu, the secretary, to go, we need to find out what's up with the evil in this power-up. Then the childhood friend of the woman shows up and, like, demands that they stop trying to find her her husband. Oh no, Deban, because she's fallen in love with the matchmaking humor gear. That's the problem.
Okay.
Meanwhile, after he leaves, the matchmaking humor gear goes, well, I've got great voice analysis programming because I'm trying to match people together. And that guy behaves exactly like the raid which attacked me earlier. So we're going to set a trap for him. I'll marry his childhood friend in a fake wedding, which will lure him out and you can get him. So they get the actor humor gear from like episode 11 and around that time. He dresses up as a vicar. they do a wedding and indeed he shows up and Thalza shows up and he petals up and like he attacks Match and like just being attacked is just enough to make Match turn into a Magia from Ark. So Ark seems to get him be more powerful. He doesn't even get angry this time. He just takes a blow from a human. Oh, I think he might get slapped. I think that might be it. And yeah, so now there's like, oh, there's two monsters to fight now and Thalza to show up. So I guess I have to use this evil belt again.
God damn it.
So he uses the evil belt. He kicks the two monsters' asses simultaneously. And then just beats the living shit out of Thalza. The great thing is that Thalza tries what, the cop tried in the previous episode of like getting in behind him to take the belt off. It doesn't work this time. He blocks the blow. So from
it's
behind.
Like it's like it's adapting to.
Yeah. And apparently this is part of Thalza's plan because he's like, he goes on about like, masses of grasshoppers are a vile, evil thing, which destroys the environment. That's what people are going to think of you now, Kamen Rider Zero One. Got Build on my mind because they said best match. my plan's working. And then we see inside of Zero One, Ruto's like falling into a pit of evil. And that's where it ends. Can you get it under control next episode? Certainly the preview suggests. I think, it seems to be like he's got to put his faith in Huber Gears. I think it's like they're going to assemble a team of Huber Gears from previous episodes and they're going to figure out how to get around this. Oh, my smoke alarm wants resetting, but hopefully it doesn't make too many more beeps. That's from cooking roast potatoes. I found a bag of roasties from Christmas that I hadn't eaten, and I was like, that'll do me for a Sunday lunch. And then the other Toei thing I watched that you didn't watch, and by me, more stuff happened in this than over both those two things put together, I think. And that is One Piece, episode 922, A Tale of Chivalry, Zoro and Tonoyasu's Little Trip. So apparently I just read on Twitter that the Wano arc, at the very least, is now available throughout Europe on Crunchyroll.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh, that's another reason to fucking check it out again, I guess.
That's a turning point, yes. So we open with Zoro, a gambling house, accompanied by this grinning fool who's encouraging him. And he's doing quite well. Then we see Nami and Shinobu doing some ninja-ing. I think they're trying to get into Orochi's castle, if I remember correctly. Kinemon is dishing out blades to various minks, that's what they're called. There's something minks in kimonos being given swords. Then Carrot and the dog mink, whose name I forget. Carrot's dug into a factory where she and a bunch of minks are stealing food and weapons, and the dog lady has to tell Carrot, take more than just carrots. All she's done is get a big box of carrots.
And then her favorite food is everyone's favorite.
And then they leave a note claiming that Shoot and Marrow did it. The bandit king.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Because I think at this point they're still trying to convince him to join. And so they're kind of forcing his hand, if I remember correctly. Frank is apologizing to his boss for ditching work to look at the most beautiful woman in Wano. And then he discovers, after apologizing, that his boss had pawned the maps of the castle that Frankie was after. So he's been wasting his time in all these episodes.
Oh my God.
Working as a carpenter. He pawned them 10 years ago. So he has to follow the trail of the maps and he discovers that someone from Kuri bought the maps. So he's wondering, who's this guy? I'm going to have to go to Kuri and find out. I forget the guy, the one of the Red Scarabs with the guy who can draw things, badly. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, he's in town selling fish and he meets up with Frankie. The fish are inverted commas because they're just drawings of fish itself.
I was going to say, are they bad drawings?
They're bad drawings. All he's got is nobody's buying the fish. He's just got loads of children laughing at the fish. To which Frankie's like, you're doing a very bad job of being undercover. Zorro is now losing in the gambling den. So he uses his no sword style, to reveal a man hidden under the dice table. Violence ensues. Then we see the man who's like the big round jolly man, big round faced jolly man who's with Zorro. His mask of joviality slips as he threatens the gambling house owner to give Zorro his money back. But now they're wandering through the ruins of Kibi and he's back to being a goof and he introduces himself as Tonoyasu, but you can call him the Sycophant Yasu. He's basically just heaping compliments on Zorro. CP0 or Theta, whatever they're called, the super secret police have shown up at Orochi's palace and they're here to buy weapons direct from Kaido because Doflamingo is in prison now, so.
Yeah, you lost your middleman kind of thing.
Yes. Mm. The guys here are the three guys who we haven't been able to clearly ID, the ones who were at Dressrosa, like the two tall guys and the one shorter guy. Mm. Like everyone else we've seen are clearly people who used to be in CP9.
Yeah.
And indeed their leader is.
At least one of them's from Wano.
Yes. So, yeah. For payment this time, and yeah, Roger's like talking like is in both their interests to keep Wano sealed from the outside world. But he's demand this time the weapons were paid for by getting a warship from Cypherpol, but this time next time he wants Dr. Vegapunk. And they're like, you can't have Dr. Vegapunk, so he shoots the one of them and then turns into a multi-head dragon and says, you'll give us what we want if you want those weapons.
Mm.
Robin is with the Oiran's retinue, who's the most beautiful woman in the world, and she enters Orochi's castle. Following her, we see I can't remember her name now, again, because it's not her real name, as we'll discover later. she appears to be very tall, but she's actually just got incredibly tall shoes on. Momo is training and Tama asks if Momo has a little sister and he says yes, but she'd be 26 years old now, to which the viewer now goes, And it was a very good episode. If there was filler, it didn't feel like filler.
I guess it's bouncing around between what everyone's doing, enough that even if those bits are short and fairly inconsequential, like Frankie, you've been wasting your entire time, it moves the plot forward still.
Yeah, I think there's plenty of time for filler once you get to the shenanigans inside the prison.
Oh, there's going to be just so many fights and so many weirdos to deal with. Yeah,
yeah,
that's fine.
Which I think we'll be in the prison next week. But who knows, more or something else next week. Then we've got the things we did watch, and that is Gegege no Kitaro, episode 94, The Phantom Train. A story which has been adapted, I think, every single time, if you count the 60 and the early 71 as the same series.
And also if you count the young Indiana Jones episode, The Phantom Train of Doom.
Well, this predates that, so.
I know, but I still like that episode.
Does that have a time-traveling train in it?
No, it's got a train with like a howitzer on the back of it in Africa.
Yeah. So, yes, they've... it opens on Valentine's Day, where... Neko Musume has finally declared her love to Kitaro.
You didn't hear it, but it definitely happened.
Yes. And then we jump forward to like the 22nd of February, where she's showing a photo to, God, my brain's gone. She's
Mana?
Mana. I wanted to call her Maya, and I was like, that's not her name.
Little Mai.
Yes. Little Mai from Moomin showed up. And, she's not interested in this lovey-dovey stuff. But then we see on the 29th of February, all hell has broken loose, and apparently
it's a vampire apocalypse.
Neko Musume and Kitaro's dad are the only people in the world who aren't vampires.
Or yokai, I think was.
Yes, humans or yokai. Although, I think it's those are the only, everybody, all humans, all yokai, apart from those two.
Oh, all the yokai are now vampires as well. Yes. That's confusing.
Yes, because Kitaro's has been turned into a vampire. And so there's only one way to fix this.
I call upon the ancient pact.
Yes. Kitaro's dad.
And train up here.
Apparently made an ancient pact with a magical time traveling train. So he sacrifices his life. Yeah.
Mm.
To summon the train, and you use the train to go back in time, but you can't mention the train to anybody, otherwise you'll die. So basically then the episode becomes like a very bleak Groundhog's Day.
Because the first time Negabatsume doesn't realize what's happening, it takes her a bit to, like, this seems familiar, that kind of thing, you know. She needs a reminder, because, like, she's of her own mind, and the only sign of it is her phone has, like, an extra crack in it every time she goes back again.
Yes.
And a nice visual, I did like that.
And responsible for this situation is the vampire P. It was a weird-looking dude.
See, that's fine, right? Because it's like, you know, Daddy Eyeball's like, oh, this looks like the work of vampire P. And it's like, it's like a little fish lizard head with, like, two stumpy legs coming out of it, a giant hand tail over his head. And also Marilyn Monroe. And I was like, hang on a second.
Yes.
I need more explanation for this now.
And also, his vampiric power is not within himself. It's within his magical hat.
Yeah. So you have to pick up his hat made of the blood of his ancestors. That's weird. And if you put it on, you'll be part of his family. And if you're part of his family, now you're a vampire. And now you can make more vampires. If you were questioning why, Ratman was wearing a big dumb fucking hat at the start of the episode, it's like, yeah, that's the reason why.
So first of all, like, yeah, Nekomasuma is trying to save Kitaro, and, then she eventually realizes, I've been too selfish. I've got to go further back than just trying to save the point at which Kitaro becomes a vampire. I've got to save the kid who hired us in the first place, and it's like, oh, that doesn't work because somebody's already been turned into a vampire before that. And then if she speaks to one of the kids who she saves, and it turns out, like, who bit the guy who bit them? And it turns out, it was a rat-looking man in a silk hat.
And it happened on Sunset on that specific day where you confessed to Kitaro.
Yes. And so in order to save her love, she's got to deny the declaration of her love by going and doing something else on Valentine's Day, which is...
And she does specify, it's like, I don't know if it was like the sunset or the moment or whatever. It's just like, it was just something in that moment that I don't think I could do again.
Yeah.
She says that initially as a thing. I was like, wow, I can't believe I got the courage to get her to fucking ask him out kind of thing.
Yeah, it was just exactly the right time for her to do it.
Yeah, yeah. The timing was perfect, basically. So having to give that up. And again, with the visual, with the phone cracking being the sign of how many times she's gone back. And then obviously that is the thing that's going to smash because it's the picture of her and Kitaro, the selfie of them together.
Yeah, and we go back to the day when they got Nozomi Otoko the first time, but this time she grabs the hat and then the excellent, like, building music as we see her in front of the train, and they're really easy to defeat because they're not very powerful. They've just got a magic
literally
hat.
Like, they had the rat man do all the biting, and then anyone he turned could turn other people, and on and on until the entire planet was covered in vampires. Yes. But your man himself is just like, oh shit, my hat.
And then she beats them up. Yeah, I really like this story. I can see why they retell it. I don't know whether it's her all the time or whether it's Kitaro in the original story.
Sure.
But, it's a nice bit of, I would do wonder who did that time travel story first, of having to go back and redo the same period of time to get it right.
It's such a thing that's done over and over since. Like, I'm not sure what the first, version of it is.
Yeah, and there's a good chance that it is somebody else's idea, because Mizuki was never afraid to take somebody else's idea and make it his own.
sure.
Particularly if you've got a deadline to meet.
Really, really excellent episode. Really good fun. Like, good emotional stakes and good kind of, like, working your way backwards and trying to figure out how to fix a problem that you know how it turns out, so you should be able to fix it, but you can't quite. Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah, I like the key thing of, like, her being too, realizing she's being too selfish in her attempt to solve the problem.
And even with her, like, having to give it up, give up her, her love and that kind of thing, her declaration of love, obviously her love is still there. But, she kind of realizes, like, fuck it, if I could do it once, I can definitely do it again. That if I have done it once, then there is a chance that I can do it again. Like, she's not hopeless by the end of it.
Yeah, I like the fact that Kitaro is, when she shows up and she's not there, he's like, oh, she must have had something more important to do. And then we get that moment of him acknowledging that, just like, a visual, no audible, but you know he's acknowledging that, oh yes, that was a nice sunset.
Yeah, where he's like, holy shit, that is actually gorgeous kind of thing. And I did like him in the episode as well, where he's still being his regular character, but, he's slightly more nervous about bringing her on the mission because he's like, I don't want you to get hurt and that kind of thing. And he's not, like, denying her. Like, she's like, no, come on, it'd be grand. We'll just do what we normally do, get in and kick ass. But he is acting a little differently. He is acting with more, like, care and everything. It's clear there's been a change, but, like, it's subtle. It's well done.
Yeah. But yeah, there's also weird stuff, like he gets baked in a bell, and the idea of there being a yokai hospital returns as well.
That bit was kind of great, where it's like, aha, no, he's basically like a Kitaro burrito in his own vest. And they're like, oh, don't worry, we'll just get him to the hospital. And it's like, oh, well, I need to go back in time and make sure that the fake Marilyn Monroe, dressed as a nurse from that hospital, didn't take him away. I need to make sure that a kid vampire doesn't burst in and eat Kitaro burritos to turn him into a vampire burrito, I guess. It's very odd. Like, it's just like, yeah, like Daddy Eyeball kept saying, it's like, yeah, time will keep trying to reassert itself to go down the path it was intending to go, that kind of way.
Then we've got Keep Your Hands Off Aizouken, episode 7, I Have to Do It For Myself. First of all, we should say that we misgendered Doemeke, but that only speaks to how gender-neutral the designs are.
I mean, like, this episode, again, kind of shows how great it is, because you got teenage girls, and they're not sexualized, and in this episode, they go to a bathhouse, and I was like, but then it was fine. It was just a bunch of kids dicking about in a bathhouse, and I was like, yeah, that's grand.
Yeah.
No problem.
And also, it's amazing that they're somehow more nude than they would be in one which was playing up for salaciousness.
But none of the nudity is played for sexual fucking, yeah. It's not played for the viewer to go, yes. It's just like, it's just a bunch of kids being comfortable in their nudity in a bathhouse. There's nothing fucking wrong with it. It's great.
Yeah. So this one gives you a lot of, Mizusaki's personality. We open with a flashback, two flashbacks. One as like a really little kid where we see her like fascinated with movement. As she keeps on throwing her tea.
She's trying to copy the way her granny throws the end of the tea, with the bits in it, out into the garden and completely like missing the boards and just the kind of like the swirling and the out motion with it. Like it's such a practiced and specific movement that she's obsessed with, both the movement of her hand, the movement of the tea in the cup, the movement of the droplets moving through the air. And she's like, how can I fucking capture that? And that kind of sets her off on her old thing of being not obsessed, sounds like a negative thing, being enraptured by movement.
Yeah.
And even the practical applications of that when her granny's getting older and she's gotten older and more practiced with movement, and her like drawing is like how different people get up and sit down. And I thought, found it fascinating where the guy like watching TV and the guy like accuses someone and he like really leans into it to make it more dramatic. She's like, oh, that's a really cool way to get up. But then she helps that with her granny, who's like, oh, I can't get out of bed. And she's like, no, if you actually do this, or if you start swaying with your walking, you'll actually walk easier.
Yeah, because we see also her at like some sort of finishing school.
Yeah. Finishing school for young ladies is like, you need to walk straight, but here's a model's walk, and here's like how to do all these things. And she's trying to do the thing herself where she's trying to get up with the chair facing the wall without leaning your head down to bash your head against the wall. Obsessed with movement and weight distribution and all that kind of fun stuff for an animator to do. Yeah.
Then we get some more of Asakusa having to be the director as the art club haven't turned in exactly what she wanted.
Oh, God, that fucking guy, man. Oh, my God. I know those clients, but you do have to learn how to deal with them. That's the problem, yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's not a client, though, but he's the client.
He's not a client. He's the guy who's working for you, but you have to exert your vision over them because they're willful otherwise. I what I mean is that, yeah, I know exactly that kind
but
of thing.
But yeah, but he's only being the same as this is Asakusa having to realize what Kanamori has to put up with Asakusa and Mizusaki.
Yeah, definitely.
And then we get the moment where she's like, I won an argument with her.
Because she just stated a thing reasonably, and it's like, yes. What? It's like, yeah, everything you said makes sense. There's no reason for her to argue with you.
The head of the club will digitize these and fix them, which is very, but at the same time, Asakusa has taken a load of them for her to fix herself.
She's taken on too much for herself.
Kanamori, gives her an earful on that, which that was the bit which I've most related to, was Kanamori getting fed up with people doing it for themselves when they should have given it somebody else to do, or at least instruct people better how to do
it. It is so much fucking easier when you're making stuff to do it yourself, but you can't do it all yourself. So you need to learn how to fucking, to micromanage other people's work and to be a director, basically is what she's trying to set her friend up to do. Yeah.
Also they've got the other thing is then we get the bit with the how sound, as she has to remind Mizusaki, you do know that film has an audio, so features audio as well as video. As they look at some footage and there they go. Well, again, once you add the sound to it, then it adds to the illusion.
Because they're kind of getting obsessed in the minutiae. It's like, oh, I want the rocks to kick up here and I want this thing. And they call Kanamori and she's like, what the fuck am I going to do? And she's like, no, I mean, like, your eye is going to be different than ours. So we need your opinion on it. And she's like, it's pretty good. So they put sound to it. And it's like, yeah, that actually adds a considerable amount to it. So their audio production stuff is going to be pretty useful.
Yeah. But then the point of the episode is that Kanamori realizes that Mizusaki is not interested in making anime. She's only interested in animation.
Yeah. There is a fucking clear difference. She's an animator and that episode makes this abundantly clear.
Yeah. And she wants to put things in that other people who appreciate animation in the same way she does will notice.
Mm.
Which then
one of the things they mention, with sound and with design and with animation is, unlike acting, where the guy just happened to be wearing that shirt because the thing, everything in animation was put there by someone. Even if sometimes it was put there as a shortcut because they didn't have fucking time. It's the fact that it was put there by something means something, and that's meaningful to, Mizusaki.
Yeah, whereas it feels like Asakusa is more into the setting and the story.
Yeah, she's a director, she's a storyteller, specifically in anime kind of terms, but there is some crossover between animation and that, obviously.
Yes, she is the one who makes the point. It's the difference between live action and animation is that every single thing you see on the screen, somebody decided to put there.
Mm.
Whereas in...
They're scouting locations, sure, but it's they're specifically choosing what to draw in, that kind of thing.
Yes. Obviously, the entire... There's bits, the bit with the guy feels like something taken straight out of an actual animation studio.
I feel like that's definitely a conversation many people have had to have.
Yes. Yeah. And I feel like the Kanamori having to manage these two is probably also taken straight out of reality of you've got to give them enough to keep them satisfied, but at the same time, you've got to drag them back to reality every so often so things actually get finished.
It's great that they have the other one in the art department who's like, I get animation, I get your man shouldn't have drawn the car in the background there, that should have been on the cell, but we'll fix it, we'll digitize it. Isn't your man, he drew the opening thing with the sun in the wrong fucking direction?
I can't remember.
Something like that. I feel like the sun was basically rising in the north rather than the west or something like that. It's like all the light was wrong and he's like, yeah, but it looks cool. And she's like, we're literally basing this on the school so people know which way fucking west is, that kind of way. It was something like that. I can't remember.
It is, but obviously the irony is exactly the same sort of thing Asakusa was arguing with the robot club about.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's basically she's arguing with another version of herself, but she's arguing with another version of herself against what the thing she would do, but she has said to other people, no, that's bad. Yeah.
But she can't be as blunt as Kanamori, but it's probably best for not to be as blunt as Kanamori, because Kanamori can be blunt to her because she knows her.
I'll say Asakusa's getting better at directions. Yes. She's still not great at it, but you can see, like, she's fucking sweating buckets in this, but she's, like, going, like, actually, I need this changed, and I need that changed. And she's just like, I hate to ask, but could you, like, fix all the problems that you just put in? And she's doing it, like, entirely nervous and freaking out about it, but at least she's actually trying to do it. So that's an improvement.
Yeah. Another good episode. It's a very good show. Everyone should watch it. What are you doing if you're not? Get on it.
Yeah, like, I feel like even if you're not, like, an animation aficionado, but, you'll probably get something from it, or you probably go, like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And also, they're really fun characters, they're good situations. It's really fun to kind of see this slow build of them, a bunch of creatives getting together and trying to make something. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, I feel like if you've ever worked with other people, be it in an educational setting, right, or a business setting or a factory,
or you've
setting.
Had, yeah, you've had to work with people from different disciplines and that kind of thing. Yeah. You know something like this. Yeah.
Yeah. You'll identify with one of the three, I'm pretty sure. Or maybe you'll identify with the robot club as well. It's like when you've got a thing and the people won't give you the thing the way you wanted it.
Yeah, I did enjoy their really bad voice acting and them wanting to put the sound effects in. The sound guy sitting there is like, yeah, we're going to have to fucking turn it. And Asakusa turned it to her. Sorry, I did it again.
Well, that's fine, because I like how...
Can we turn him down in the mix? And she's like, yeah, we can definitely turn him down. It's fine.
I think, like, the gender neutral stuff applies to these, some of the male characters as well, particularly that the guy from the art club.
Mm-mm.
Is...
They're just kids, like, so yeah exactly. Sticking that on them is weird.
Yeah, unless they've like been hit with puberty stick hard, then you're not going to be able to tell yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that it's yeah, it works quite well. But I think there's the SWAT team are back next week, from what I've saw of Twitter previews of the next episode.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah, okay.
There's so many questions about the actual school.
Like, this school is fucking crazy. Like, obviously it's crazy. They have, like, a fucking actually fairly extensive disused fucking animation department. I'm like, how big is this place? Because it seems like it's pretty big, and it seems like it's fairly diverse in terms of its student body and, like, all the various hobbies and clubs that they're in. That sound fucking thing, when I was just like, oh, wow, this is a great sound library. And he was like, yeah, we have, like, three more of these rooms. And I was like, what? You crazy lunatic.
Yeah, I think it does it well because of, like, you've got to have the fantasy world of the things they're making. But
yeah.
Also, there's the fantasy world of their own world, but their fantasy yes. world is, like, reality. Not, like, a hyped reality, but just a lot of reality. Like, more of everything than there should be. Or things in places where they shouldn't be. It's like the bathhouse has got, like, they've got a sign saying, don't use this way to go in. Of course they use that way to go in.
And you want, yeah, you want in the bathhouse is grand because it's pissing fucking cats and dogs. Yes. Like, yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, it's like more of everything rather than like a hyper version of everything. There's
that laundrette is so like a really exaggerated version of a tiny, like, laundrette, to the point where, like, the fan is in the door and everything, and the bathhouse is, like, big and expansive and actually quite lovely, but still, like, huge. Everything in the show is an exaggeration, but then the fictional reality that they're trying to make in the show is another thing entirely.
Yeah, but obviously they can occasionally do things like saying, this is a thing, and sometimes it's in the fantasy world where they're illustrating it, but sometimes it is literally in the real world of, like, it could be a subtle movement. And obviously, as they're talking about a subtle movement, you're seeing a subtle movement.
I love that, where she kind of, like, blinks and looks over and her hair is flowing. And I'm like, you fucking clever bastards. Or they'll be talking about doing backgrounds, and then you'll be looking at the fucking backgrounds. Because as they're talking about how animation is made, they've specifically put them in. You're looking at how this animation is made. And it's lovely. I mean, like, this show is just enjoyable as a thing to watch. But then, since it's breaking down animation, you can watch the animation. Because then when you talk about, oh, yeah, the movement of swirling that and throwing it out, that's actually really nicely animated. So you kind of go like, yeah, that is actually very well done. It's nearly like patting itself on the back if it wasn't for the fact that it's very sensible in how it's doing it. Yeah.
But then the opposite night, you've got blooming Asakusa making animal noises in the bath like she's some sort of creature washing herself.
Dear. In terms of identifying, I think I get more so on Asakusa and Mizusaki. I kind of wish I had more fucking level-headedness of Kanemori. That's kind of what I like. I need that as the balance, because if you don't have that, you get nothing done.
Yeah, I think Katamori is the breakout character from looking at
she's great.
Fan reactions to it. But that's because she's the one who, I guess it's her, then Asakusa is, they're the more cartoony characters in terms of.
Sure.
They've got the most cartoony expressions and reactions to people.
The little short one and the big tall lanky one. Just like their silhouettes and everything. But, I like the idea of Mizusaki like moving differently to those two, but having like a more generalized appearance. Yes. But I'm glad she got a lot to do, but a lot of background and a lot of explaining the way she sees it. Like even them talking about their parents, where Asakusa has to just say to her mom and dad, it's like, hey, yeah, I'll be back late because I've gone to the bathhouse with my friends. As long as the parents know where you are, they're fine. But with her, like, she's given the freedom to do whatever the fuck she wants, but maybe she'd like some of that structure that you kind of get from parents who are there in your life, that kind of thing. It's not that they're abusive or anything to her, that they let her off, that, like, but it's just like that's a experience of life that she doesn't get.
Yeah, I'm still curious about the live action. I saw they put the photos up of the people playing the student council.
Oh, I didn't see those. Okay.
And they're all pretty spot on. Like, yeah, I think the only issue they've got is they can't really find anyone as small as Asakusa is in the comic or the cartoon.
I feel like you have to like cheat with like trenches and boxes, and if you wanted to do that.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be wearing that army hat a lot and the carrying a massive rucksack.
I guess with the rucksack, you could kind of like bend yourself over a little, make yourself look smaller, that kind of way. If she doesn't carry herself as tallly, that kind of way. Yeah, it could work.
Rightio, that is everything for this week. Once more, we'll be back here next week with Niall, the full Monty, so to speak, the full package, lineup.
This is recorded audio. You don't know if it's full Monty.
Well, that's true. We
it's too fucking cold, honestly.
Yes, it may be in the summer when we're back in the heat part of this climate apocalypse.
sure.
Window wide open, podcasting nude. Rightio, we'll be back here next week with more of the same, probably more things, because I'm sure Niall would have watched things that I haven't watched.
I don't think we have anything new starting up anytime soon, but I know it's on the way.
Yeah, it's probably about 5 weeks away.
Mm-hmm.
Or thereabouts. But I think some of these things, like I say, there's only 3 more episodes, I think, of Irumakun. So we'll actually have some light weeks before
we start. So we'll have a little bit of calm before the storm of new stuff again. But it might be a good excuse to try out some things like One Piece and dip your nose in something else that you'd kind of let pass by.
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping the new Sentai isn't any good, so that reduces things to watch.
I'm really enjoying these shows, but goddamn, there's so many good shows. Yeah.
Yeah, next month. I've already got 6 picked out. So, if any more, because most of these things are stopping, I think, apart from, Shiro in terms of the anime. So yeah, it's a whole new slate. A lot of it, we're talking animals. So I've got that to look forward to. Right, we're back here next week. Goodbye.
Bye.